Ladies and gentlemen, it's Shout Out After Dark, the deeper topics that you want.
So hello, very warm welcome to Shout Out After Dark, our third in the series. And today we're going to be talking about two drugs, one called PEP and one called PREP, or as we more commonly refer to them, PEP and PREP. I'm Andy Thomas, and unusually I'm actually here on my own today because poor old Terry's ill in bed. But we hope you get well soon, mate, and we'll see you on the next one. In the meantime, though, I'm very kindly joined by three people who I don't think we've ever had such a range of experts on the show before, which is going to be brilliant. But I'm joined first of all by Dr. Brett Palmer, who's a registrar in public health and volunteers at an STI clinic, and is also the author of lifestyle website brettpalmer.co.uk. A very warm welcome to you. And Craig Hobson, who is a nurse manager for THT Bristol and West. A very warm welcome to you too.
Thank you.
And welcoming back to Shout Out, although first time on After Dark, isn't it? But you've been on the main show with us before, is Greg Owen, who is an activist and also runs the website iwantprepnow.co.uk, which since the stardom of Shout Out went on to Channel 4 and all sorts. So.
Hello.
A very warm welcome back to you. So.
Thank you.
Now, first thing I want to kind of clarify before we go into the two drugs that we're going to be talking about is one of the things we got as feedback after having Greg on the show before was a lot of people still get quite mystified about the differences between HIV and AIDS, and obviously where we're going to be talking about drugs that are very specifically to do with them, we thought it might be kind of good to kind of clear up the differences between the two. So I don't know, perhaps if one of you would like to kick off and tell us a bit about the differences. Correct me if I'm wrong, mm-hmm. HIV is the actual infection that you catch, isn't it?
Exactly. HIV is the virus, which is what you pass on from one individual to another, or ideally don't pass on from one individual to another. And if you remain undiagnosed, it will develop into various diseases when your immune system is suppressed, and that is what we can call, that's what we call AIDS, which is acquired immunodeficiency syndrome.
Right. So it's not actually the HIV that kind of leads to death, but say it's the acquisition of everything else because of a damaged immune system by HIV.
Yeah, HIV destroys particular cells in the immune system, and once you've got a certain amount destroyed in your body, you then start picking up various diseases and various types of cancer in particular, and these what usually leads to death. So when people died before all the treatments came out, 5, 6, 7, 8 years after acquiring HIV, they would die of AIDS. But with all the medications we have now, we can stop that decline and you can live a normal, healthy and happy life with HIV.
So someone who is HIV positive now, the drugs are very much designed to suppress that, I presume, and stop you from acquiring the other things?
Yes.
There shouldn't be, I mean, I say shouldn't, in an ideal situation we have the resource available in the UK that no one really should progress from HIV to full-blown AIDS. Obviously that's very dependent on access to drugs and retaining a patient in healthcare, but if you take the drugs regularly, your HIV won't progress to AIDS. So AIDS is a thing, certainly here in the UK and in the developed world, that's not seen too often. AIDS is, there's still an AIDS crisis, but you need to look to Eastern Europe, Russia, and obviously Sub-Saharan Africa, where they still have a very real AIDS crisis.
Right. So we're going to be talking about two drugs, PEP and PrEP. What are the differences between, we'll do PrEP in the second half of the show, but to give the listeners at home an idea of what they are, what's the difference between the two? Because they're very similarly named, it'd be very easy to get them muddled up, wouldn't it?
Sure. I think, so PEP essentially is a little bit like the morning after pill, so it's for post-exposure to the HIV virus, whereas PrEP is pre-exposure, so people can take PrEP prior to being exposed to, or potentially being exposed to the HIV virus, and it gives them protection then from the virus.
Cool. And if I understand, I mean, we'll come on to PrEP a little bit later. It's also an HIV treatment in its own, isn't it?
PrEP.
Along with
the drugs they use for the drugs we use for PrEP is Truvada, and Truvada is quite a popular and well used drug used in combination normally with another drug. My first course or treatment program on antiretroviral therapy was Truvada and Raltegravir. So it was Truvada and Raltegravir in the morning and Raltegravir again 12 hours later. So just they have found through various studies just by taking the Truvada that acts as we talked about a pre protection against HIV exposure.
Cool. Well, we'll come on to PrEP in the second half, but PEP, you describe it as a kind of morning after pill. Is it an actual HIV treatment drug? Is it used if you are HIV positive? Is it one of the ones that gets
it's
you?
Actually, my treatment when I first became positive, the two drugs that I mentioned, Truvada and Raltegravir, is what I would take as a HIV positive person to keep the HIV suppressed and under control. Those two drugs are what they actually use now. They give you exactly the same drugs for PEP, P-E-P. So that's a 30-day course of those two drugs, which, if taken within 72 hours of exposure or risk, should hopefully keep you HIV negative.
Well, I was going to say, because that is one of the key things. I mean, why is it 72 hours? What happens after? Is it too far advanced by that point? Or
I can answer again. I have an answer, but anybody else want to jump in? Basically, the way that HIV replicates inside your body is HIV will enter, and then it sort of, if you like, it invades a cell, and then it replicates, duplicates itself, and then it bursts out of the cell. And it can do that at a very, very, very fast rate. So they say, you can take PEP.
Sounds quite nasty. I mean, obviously it's so small scale, you don't...
It is actually...
Bursting out of cell sounds quite horrible.
If you do a bit of research into HIV and how it replicates, it is quite a disturbing process, and it's a very highly skilled at replicating as well. So basically, you can take PEP. If it's after the 72 hours, you can still go and try and get PEP. I mean, the chances of you being offered it at an A&E or a sexual health clinic are greatly reduced, simply because it's not that its effectiveness stops at 72 hours. It just becomes less and less and less, and it's quite an expensive course of treatment. So if you think, ideally, it's best if you start within 24 hours, and each 12-hour section that you progress after the exposure, the likelihood of keeping you HIV negative drops from the mid to high 90% down to into the 80s, and then quite significantly then after 72 hours into, I think, approaching just a 50-50 chance. So the sooner you can get it, the better.
I mean, you this must be something you see quite a lot. Is it are people more aware of PEP yet, or are they coming in just because they think perhaps something like a condom split, or they've had an accident or something? And
well, I occasionally work in A&E as well, and when I've worked in A&E on Sunday, that's my experience of giving out PEP, to be perfectly honest with you. There are people who have done something on Saturday night and they come in on Sunday. Usually condoms split or condoms weren't involved, they got carried away, and so they embark on PEP. And then what happens then is the next day, which is a Monday, they go straight up to sexual health services or GUM services to get various tests and to make sure they're happy about continuing the treatment. Usually if you're starting the treatment, you've got to continue it for the whole month, which right. is obviously the best advice.
And just touching on that, how good are we now at detecting HIV? Because I remember it used to be 3 months before it would show up on a test. Is that still the case? Or?
Well, there are a range of different tests, and some tests are better than others. But I work in the Swindon GUM clinic only one evening a week, and I tell people that that you have a 6-week window period, and after those 6 weeks, the test is near enough 100% accurate. There are tests out there which you can do after a 4-week window period. And there are also rapid tests which can give a very, very quick turnaround, but their window period is very much prolonged.
Right.
So it's not a question of one test suits everyone. It all depends on your personal circumstances. The most important thing I would say is, from the public health side, as well as you know, on the humanity side, is go and get tested, because there is a very, very large proportion of people out there who don't know their status, and these are the people that rock up in A&E on a Wednesday night with a fever and a weird rash, and they've got AIDS. And that is actually that's called a late diagnosis of HIV.
Which I believe can be it's far better to find out
exactly
early, isn't it?
Far better to know your status, so you can go on treatment, and then one, you stop spreading it, and two, your outcome, you'll probably live a longer, healthy life.
And I think certainly to follow on from what Brett said about testing, with THT, what we're trying to do is we run weekly clinics for people to walk in, but we're also trying to get out into the community and actually test people with the rapid test that you've talked about. The test that we use, it's a 12-week window period. Sure. So we'll discuss with people kind of what their risk has been, whether they need to retest because of the window period, and then we would actively discuss with people about PEP and how to access that. Should they be in a situation where they've been exposed?
Right. Well, I'm guessing that's not something obviously THT can actually prescribe to PEP, is it?
No, we would direct
you
them
do
through
the testing.
To an A&E department or a sexual health clinic, but we do the testing. And I think it's just moving away from people that won't necessarily go into a conventional sexual health clinic, trying to kind of get people out in the community.
Yeah. I mean, I was going to ask, because we know that it's all a confidential thing, and going and getting tested is private. It's not something that's made publicly aware anyway. But some people still, whether it be through a fear of a hospital or something like that, would prefer somewhere like THT. Is the testing the same? Would you still push them to go to something like the GUI clinic afterwards, or is it GUM we call it these days?
You can say it's sexual health clinic.
We tend to offer now, it's not just HIV testing that we're doing, so we offer a full range of sexual health screenings, so chlamydia, gonorrhea, syphilis, hepatitis. We tend to work with people that don't have symptoms. If somebody presented to us with symptoms, we would direct them through to a sexual health clinic so they can be managed there. But we offer the full range. So if we needed to, if somebody was tested positive, then we'd then refer them into wherever their relevant clinic is for them to be followed up. But it's about having that safe space in the community. It is confidential. We get people that will come in and give aliases. So it's more a case of actually getting people tested so that we can kind of move away from the late diagnosis that you talked about.
So when should I consider, well, not just me, for the audience I'm asking this, but when should you consider going and finding out if you should be on PEP or not? Is it, you know, because we've all had those nights when you're a bit too drunk and you forget or something, and, you know, should you go straight down to your A&E then, or is it? Well, you tell me what would be the kind of recommended.
If you've had sexual intercourse without a condom, and you're very, very worried or concerned, I would say, depending on you either come to A&E. If it's at the weekend, or if it's during the week, you book an emergency appointment with the local sexual health or GUM centre, and come to us, and we can do the risk assessment for you. We can talk about what you actually did, and if it's risky at all, or it puts you at high risk. Because there's some activities which people think they can get HIV, but the risk is negligible.
Right.
Or zero.
So the answer to your question is, valid, because we talk through risk assessment and identifying risks, which some people aren't clear on. But this is a reactive course of treatment. So you've been in a situation that maybe you didn't make the best of choices, and therefore you react to that. So the answer is as soon as possible. So if it's a Saturday night and you still were up Sunday afternoon, or maybe you were on recreational party drugs, as soon as you start to be a little bit more compos mentis and can assess the situation for what it was, go directly to seek help from an A&E or a sexual health clinic, and then they will talk you through the next process. Just adding on to what we talked about with HIV testing, if it's a big, big problem for you to go into a sexual health clinic or even something in the community that Terence Higgins offer, there are postal tests that you can do now. You can test yourself.
Right.
I have slight reservations about those personally. Because I always think with something so important as a HIV test that you should have the support there should it return a positive result.
And having been to an STI clinic, I can assure you it's not a scary thing at all. They're all really, really nice, certainly the one here in Bristol. But there are people out there that are just too scared to do something like that and perhaps would prefer doing it in their own home. And I'm guessing that's still better than
You can Google that and you can get a free home test kit that you can post off. So certainly if a clinic is not the right option for you, Google home testing kits.
Now, we're concentrating very much on men here, but what if you're female, especially if there's other complications, like say, for example, you're pregnant. Is PP still something you can take, or are there complications with that?
Well, if you're pregnant and you've had risky sex and you want to find out what to do, I think it's very important then that you either come to A&E as quick as you can, or ideally you come to a GUM or sexual health centre, because then they can advise and put you on treatment accordingly. You're talking about a woman who knows she's HIV negative, I'm sure.
Well, or is assuming she is.
Assuming, yeah. Normally, when a lady becomes pregnant, on her what's called her booking bloods, she will be screened for HIV anyway. You're usually screened for a number of diseases. So most women out there who are pregnant, become pregnant in the UK, will know their HIV status fairly quickly, because the screening for pregnant women is actually quite good.
So is there any limit on the number of times you can be put on PEP?
Is it
a case of if like in the course of, because it's about a month's course, you said.
Well,
isn't
yeah,
it?
Well, but yeah, 12 months in a year would dictate that you can only be on it 12 times in one calendar year.
But there's no legal. You wouldn't have the NHS turning around and saying, no, we're not going to give this to you because you know you're just being too risky or something.
Well, here's the thing: if you are taking 3 pills a day for 30 days and you're doing that every other month, that's a lot of drugs, which will lead you nicely on to PrEP, P-R-E-P. If you're taking that amount of drugs when you're reacting to poor choices and high risky sex, then PEP, P-E-P, is not for you. PrEP, then, is a consideration. It's one pill a day that you can take. This, obviously, you're reducing the amount of drugs that you need in your system, and it offers you 100% protection, pretty much 100%. All of the time. So you're in the border then.
We'll talk about PrEP in the second half. But with these drugs, I mean, especially with PEP, are there side effects when you're on them that you're aware of?
Side effects to every drug you take. You know, even from aspirin, you'll get a side effect. You know, it's just a question of sometimes the whole point of taking these drugs is the side effect is it suppresses or kills off HIV. So that's a side effect of the drug. In terms of unpleasant side effects, I'll defer to my colleague.
If we're talking about PEP, P-E-P, it was the course of treatment that I started as a HIV positive person. I noticed absolutely no side effects whatsoever. Apart from, I think in week 2 of taking the meds, I had 2 5-minute bouts of nausea, but that could have been my hangover. I'm not sure. but if it's that mild and I could confuse it with a hangover, then the
I'm not saying that's a reason not to take it. I was just asking
it's a very valid question.
I have had friends that have done it and have been terribly nauseous the whole way through.
They actually just changed the meds. I said that now the drugs they use for PEP is Truvada and Raltegravir. They changed that very recently, I think in the last year or two, because the possible side effects on Truvada and Raltegravir are very, very bland. So there were slightly more side effects in the previous combination used. This combination is pretty side effect free.
Yeah, there's an old class of drugs which is still used, protease inhibitors, and that causes quite a few side effects. And there's lots of people out there who think that, oh, well, if I'm put on any kind of treatment, I'm going to have nausea, vomiting, I'm going to lose weight, have really, really bad diarrhea. And for some drugs, that is the case. But a lot of the modern drugs now, the side effect profile is much, much improved.
And I think also, just from experience of talking to people that have been on PEP, maybe people that have used PEP in the past where they've had the older drugs, well, there were more side effects. They've kind of had an experience from that kind of sticks in their mind. So I think just getting that message across that we've moved on with the drugs that we offer, and that profile is a lot less.
Yeah, you can understand people being confused because we just call it PEP.
Sure.
And of course, in actual fact, it's not. It's drugs that have changed. So in short, I mean, we'll move on to PrEP in our second half. But in short, if you've had anything that that's happened to worry you, such as a condom split, or you know, perhaps you have one too many and forgot the condom in the first place. Get yourself either to the emergency A&E if it's a weekend, or book yourself in for an emergency appointment with your local STI clinic as soon as you can. I think sounds like the most sensible advice, doesn't it?
And it's completely confidential. We don't tell your GP. And that's very important. You can use an alias, a false name. Just the important thing is know your status. That's the important thing.
Yeah. Listen, we're going to take a very short break and go across to the Screen Queens, as they call themselves, who this week are going to be reviewing The Danish Girl. We'll be back in our second half and we'll be talking about PrEP. So stay with us. You're listening to Shout Out After Dark.
After Dark.
Yes, the Screen Queens are back with yet another LGBT movie review. Today, the focus is undeniably on the T. Or is it? With our intrepid panel discussing The Danish Girl. Directed by Tom Cooper and starring Oscar-nominated Alicia Vikander and Oscar-winning Eddie Redmayne, the movie's a fictitious love story, and it's inspired by the lives of Danish artists Lily Elbe and Gerda Wegner. Lily and Gerda's marriage and work evolve as they navigate around Lily's groundbreaking journey as a transgender woman.
Is there something you'd like to tell me?
Is there something you'd like to know?
I'm your wife. I know everything.
Every morning, I promise myself that I will spend the entire day as a man. But I think Lily's thoughts. I dream her dreams.
The most likely explanation is a chemical imbalance.
He wants to lock me up.
We trusted you. We came to you for help.
Surgery has never been attempted before.
It could kill you.
It's my only hope.
I love you. You're my whole life.
You're the only person who made sense of me. Who made me possible.
With me on the panel today are Steffi and Lynn, Tara, Mitch and Jane. Say hello to everybody.
Hello. Hello.
And Steffi, let me start with you first of all. What are your thoughts on the movie? Is it a transgender movie?
Primarily when I saw the movie, I've seen it twice now. Both times it hits me as a love story, primarily, not a story about transgender issues. I see it as a love story because I see the actors, Gerda, the characters Gerda and Lily, or Einar, before the transition, they're desperately in love, and gender dysphoria comes right in the middle of it and tries to destroy their marriage.
What about, you know, what other people have had to say? You know, externally, I've read a lot of blogs and things on the internet about the movie being damaging or, you know, inappropriate for transgender people. Do you think that's the case, Steffi?
There isn't. No, I don't. No, no. I've read a lot of blogs from transgender activists and yeah, there's a lot of negativity out there. Personally, I don't see it. I saw it as a love story, not a documentary on gender dysphoria, which I think is what they were aiming at. Another thing I didn't like was how they dissed Gerda's position. They thought it should be more about Lily and that the wife didn't matter. To me, it was about the two characters. They were both in that. They were both having to put up with Einar's gender dysphoria. And the tearing apart of that relationship was palpable. The acting was absolutely superb.
Well, they've both been nominated for Oscars. But let me bring you in, Tara, now as well, because you're trans as well.
Yep.
How did the movie affect you when you saw it?
I felt really depressed at the end of it, to be honest, in terms of I really felt for the wife.
Not a happy ending.
Was it a happy ending? No, it wasn't really a happy ending. But it was how she felt. I think it was filmed in such a way that you had empathy for the wife more.
Is that a good thing or a bad thing? Do you think that was damaging for trans people because your empathy sort of oozed out?
Well, I'm a trans person. I felt more empathy for the wife.
Interesting.
And that was just me watching it.
I agree, Tara. I felt a lot of empathy for Gerda's position.
And it made me feel it made me think about what I put somebody else through, having transitioned.
Well, let me bring Lynn in there, because Lynn, you're Steffi's partner, and you've got a really unusual perspective, really, because bearing in mind this happened 90 years ago, did you see sort of parallels with your relationship with Steffi?
Yes, it was like going through it all again. It just dragged up all the emotions, all the feelings, the heartbreak, and the feeling of this being not fair. You love that person and you know what they're going through and you want to support them, but at the same time, having to, the loss, trying to hold on to that person, your husband, and it's just not going to happen. You just cannot do it, whatever you go through. And the feelings, as Steph said, is they're palpable. That was me. I was in Gerda's head.
Do you think the film is a really good thing for other people to watch, people who aren't trans, who aren't LGBT, in order to get an impression as to what it's really like? Do you think it was really representative of what you went through?
I think I wish I had been better educated about it before I went to see it. It would have been a lot nicer to know more of the background story, because from my perspective, I thought it was based on true facts. And it's only, you know, after the film that I found out more about it.
That's right, because there is a lot of controversy because obviously Lily's story is completely different. Her real story is almost completely different to what's portrayed in the movie. And that's why I want to bring in Mitch there, because you know a lot about the background of Lily's real background anyway, don't you, with her, with the fact that she had four operations as opposed to two that are portrayed in the movie. Do you think it's important that do you think the movie really should have represented her real life, or do you think it doesn't matter?
It's hard to say if it matters or not. I think on the one hand, if you're going to sell it as a true story, then it should actually be as close to the truth as possible. It's been Hollywoodized and it's been made accessible to a wider audience other than the LGBT community. And I guess for that reason, it's a good thing, because it's opened that conversation, that dialogue, and people have gone and researched and revisited these. You know, actually, Ina was a great painter. But then when Lily came along for Ina, the painting stopped. You know, Lily didn't, she stopped painting because it was associated with Ina.
Do you think she saw herself as a different person?
Absolutely. Of course, and for her, it was more about presenting, you know, and this presentation of being female. You know, what can you do in those days? What year was it? 90 years ago. You know, for women, these roles in beauty and fashion and things like that, those were truly feminine. And Ina needed to express the feminine because, she had no option. She had no option. That's what she had to do. And that's what came across in the film, that despite her, you know, seemingly selfish sort of behaviour, when Lily came through, she had no option but to stay there.
Jane, let me come to you, because you run the Queer Vision, which is a Bristol Pride LGBT all year round LGBT film festival, or LGBT plus, really, we should say. Yeah. Do you think the movie's will have a positive effect on the community, or maybe not the community, but outside the community? What are your thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, I think I was thinking about this and other films such as Blue is the Warmest Colour, also Brokeback Mountain. And how mainstream takes on LGBTQIA issue based films have created a bigger audience. It's about reach, really, and you're accessing bigger audiences, and so in that sense, actually bringing those topics and that awareness to the table is very important, although it is also important how these people are portrayed.
Yeah, I want to go back to something that Mitch said a minute ago about some personalities, etc. But there's a line that Hans says during the movie to Lily, and he says, "I've only liked a handful of people in my life, and you've been two of them." Now, let me ask all of you, actually, if anyone wants to respond. If you are trans, are you two people, or have you always been the same person inside? Maybe Steph or Tara would like to say that.
I would say that I was never two people. I know how Lily was portrayed and that there was a woman inside, and you described Lily as a separate person. I was never like that. I was always me, and all right, I had a boy's body when I was born, but that was nothing to do with my head. What was in my head was girl.
Yeah, I found it really, female. Really, I struggled with that quote when you came out. What about you, Tara? Do you see yourself as a different person inside, or
no? I've just seen myself as grown. I've grown up.
Right.
I've actually developed into who I should have been, and I think I struggled in the movie was that it was like an on-off switch. It was something that just appeared in the movie. And I can't see that really being the case.
Interesting. That's interesting. I mean, there's a lot of controversy with the movie. Obviously, the fact that one person has been given Best Supporting Actress nominated for Best Supporting Actress instead of Supporting Actress, and vice versa. So a lot of controversy there. We've had a very interesting set of opinions today, and ones which probably contrast quite strikingly with those that you might hear elsewhere in reviews and in the blogosphere. But it's time for our scores on the Green Room doors from our panel. And stars out of 5 from all of you, please. Let's start with you, Steffi. How many?
As an entertainment love story, 5.
Lynn?
Yes, definitely 5. From 5.
You. Okay. Mitch?
I'd actually give it a 3.5.
Okay. And from you, Jane?
I think because of the acting, it was great, whether it's portraying real facts or anything, so I'd have to go for a 4.
You're going for a 4? And Tara, finally you?
4.
I'm going to go for a 4.5, I think. So, but anyway, don't just take our word for it, though. Go and see the movie or download it for yourselves, legally, of course. And that's it today from the Screen Queens for this edition of Shout Out After Dark. Back now over to Annie and Terry shortly for an in-depth discussion on PrEP. Say goodbye, everybody.
Bye.
So, welcome back to Shout Out After Dark. I hope you had a nice kind of outing with the guys over at Screen Queens. This second half, we're going to talk about PrEP, which I believe gets its name from the pre.
Okay, it's a daily pill, basically. So it's not you're not taking it in reaction to an incident. It's something you're doing before a possible exposure.
Now, a lot of people also know it as, or those that do know it, will also know it as Truvada. What's the difference? Is that just a product name? Or?
Yeah, Truvada is the brand name for PrEP, which is two active medications in Truvada. But you can obviously source PrEP generically, so you can have a non-branded version of PrEP, which is tenofovir EM.
It's been a big kind of topic of debate recently because we were talking about this before we came back on it, but all about the whole safer sex message and the like. And you quite rightly corrected me when I was saying, you know, when we're talking about this, we're not condoning unprotected sex. In actual fact, you would class PrEP as a form of protected sex.
Yeah, it's HIV protected sex, as is having condomless sex with a HIV positive guy who adheres to his medication and who is now undetectable, which means undetectable is also equivalent to non-infectious. So if you're having, as a HIV negative person, if you are having condomless sex with a HIV positive person who's undetectable, that's HIV safer and HIV protected sex because there's no risk of onward transmission from the HIV positive person, which is actually more effective than a condom.
The biggest thing to point out, obviously, is it doesn't protect you from anything else.
True. You still need to take other precautions for other STIs.
It should be worth pointing out that the studies that have looked into PrEP have shown that there has been no increase in cases of gonorrhea, chlamydia or syphilis in the control group, in other words, in the group that was taking the Truvada. It's a bit of a myth to turn around and say, oh, well, if people are taking PrEP, isn't there going to be explosion in gonorrhea or chlamydia? That's completely unfounded.
But that has been the big worry, isn't it? That they were, if you listen to the kind of critics of it, they say, if there's this pill that stops HIV from being transmitted, all of a sudden everyone's going to go out and have unprotected sex and everything else will get spread.
Yeah, but there's also a lot of anecdotal evidence that I know of personally that people who are taking PrEP privately and getting tested in various clinics are actually being more careful and more likely to use a condom because things are not so inevitable anymore. They're taking extra precautions. It seems to be the opposite of what is reported in some of the more extreme ends of the media. It's not what I've seen personally. I'm not sure if what the experience of the other guys are.
If you're on PrEP as a HIV protection, you have to have quarterly checkups. So you will go every 3 months for a HIV test. And at that point of testing, if you're feeding into a sexual health clinic, they will offer you a full screening. So although we might see a spike in new diagnoses, I don't think PrEP is in any way responsible for increasing the volume of other STIs that are out there. Those other STIs have been rising steadily since the mid-90s, so that's 20 years.
Now, at the moment, PrEP isn't available yet on the NHS, is it?
Yes, NHS England will come out with their opinion, as it were, in June 2016. It doesn't mean it will be available from the NHS in June 2016. It may be many, many months or longer after that announcement, but it's a very important signposting announcement for the NHS England's intention.
Are you getting people asking at THT when they're coming in? Are you getting inquiries about it from people at all?
I think we talk about PEP quite extensively with everyone that we test. Interestingly, I've not had much of a discussion around PrEP. As an organisation, we actively talk about safe sex, we talk about condoms, condom use for sex, and we do outreach to distribute condoms. I think in terms of what Greg was saying, PrEP can be used as a prevention for HIV. In terms of the wider sexual health and sexually transmitted infections, we would advocate the use of condoms to protect yourself against those. But as Brett has said, there's no kind of evidence to say that there's been an increase in that. I guess
but there's no reason why if you're on PrEP, you
I think they can be used in conjunction. Totally.
I just wonder whether people have been asking about it, whether the knowledge is getting out there, whether people are starting to become aware of PrEP.
I think today is a great opportunity for us to actually get that knowledge out so that people are aware of it, because certainly it's not something that we're actively talking about. I think there's a big difference between maybe the work that I did in London compared to Bristol now, where maybe the message is a lot wider in London and you're not necessarily seeing that in smaller cities. Today's a great opportunity to get that message across and also encourage people to take responsibility for their sexual health and to test, more importantly. I think just going back to what you said earlier.
Is it worth everybody that's, well, not just gay people. I mean, unfortunately, it tends to be mainly, what do we call it? MSM. That tends to be the focus that it gets because of the high transmission rate, unfortunately. But is it everybody? Should all of us who have sex with other men be thinking about being on PrEP, or is it...
Okay, two things on that. PrEP is a HIV prevention method that has benefits right across every identify group, right across every risk group. However, to answer your question, PrEP is particularly effective and beneficial for men who have sex with men because of the way it works in the male body. Also, it's very... a great tool for trans women. Now, I'm going to focus on those two risk groups, particularly just to answer your question. PrEP is, as the efficacy of PrEP in women is as high as that of men who have sex with men. However, there are different variables in there in regards to the length of time it takes to build up adequate protection in the female.
So it's different for women than men taking it.
But if you want to go off a general rule of thumb, if you take daily PrEP every day, it's as the efficacy is the same in any group.
Right.
However, the reason why it's particularly great for men who have sex with men is that, first of all, we embrace our sex and our sexuality and we discuss it and we are very aware of HIV. It's part of our community. It's part of our everyday lives. I think all of us would wish that it maybe wasn't so much. Therefore, we're more accepting and embracing of a potentially new concept. In fact, it's no longer a concept, it's a reality. But we embrace that. Men who have sex with men are not the difficult people to try and position this new form of HIV protection to. Trans women are catching on to it as well, but it's Black and minority ethnic groups that probably need PrEP more so than any other group. They account for 2% of the UK's population, but they account for 34 or 38% of new HIV infections. Right. That's disproportionate. Mm-hmm. And that group, that risk group, needs some sort of outreach that's led by that community in order to try to position PrEP within that community. That's unacceptable, those stats.
Well, so take me through the procedure. It's just a simple pill a day, isn't it? It's just
one pill
the one.
A day, yeah.
What do I need to consider before deciding to start taking PrEP? Because at the moment, I couldn't go get it off the NHS. I'd have to buy it privately.
You can get it off my website.
You were waiting for that opportunity.
I was like, when can I get this in?
So if I want to start taking PrEP tomorrow, is it worth doing if I'm someone who's in a stable monogamous relationship? Probably not. But if I'm going out... and you know, enjoying myself as we all do, whatever age you are. I mean, some people come out at different ages, so I'm not going to say it's only when you're students, because that's not true. But you know, what are the things you should consider? If I recall from having you on our live show, first thing you need to do is go get an HIV test.
There are a lot of things you need to think about before you go on PrEP. All of those are personal and to do with you, but the only really base thing, the only basic thing that you need to make sure of is that you're HIV negative. That's it, really. The rest of things, there are...
But there's a very good reason for that, isn't there? It's
creating a drug resistance. So to clarify, you won't get a drug resistance if you haven't got HIV in your system. The drug resistance comes from you being HIV positive, introducing this one drug, which is not enough to suppress the virus by itself. It needs to be used in conjunction with another drug. So if you're HIV positive and you start taking Truvada, the HIV in your system becomes wise to Truvada. So it's not great. Bottom line, get tested, make sure you're negative, and make sure you're negative outside of the window period of 12 weeks.
It's also the same in terms of drug resistance. You may have heard a lot in the media about drug resistance to bacteria. It's the same principle.
Gonorrhea is a big one.
Exactly.
I'm really worried about that.
And it's to a certain extent, on a very, very simplistic level, it's the same with HIV as the same as gonorrhea. People who take their drugs intermittently or are not taking the full course of their medication. So if you go to a gun clinic or sexual health clinic and given a 7-day course or 2 weeks or depending on whatever drug they give you, and you don't finish it or you only finish half of it, then the chances are gonorrhea will become or could become resistant. And it's much the same with HIV. If you decide to take your medication intermittently and your viral load is going up, down, then sooner or later, it's only a matter of time before it becomes resistant. And then all of a sudden, that drug is no good for you.
So how long does it take for you to know that the PrEP that you're taking is working?
There are three ways that you can take PrEP. The largest studies, which we base a lot of our reference points off. So the largest study, which is here in the UK, is the PROUD study, went off one daily pill per day. So a lot of the figures and the stats that we quote will be of that. However, there have been substantial studies and tests to show that intermittent PrEP or alternate dosing, as long as it's four doses a week, offers you still around 80 to 86% protection from HIV. There's also a third method of dosing, which is called Ibergay or event-based dosing. It takes at least 8 to 10 hours for sufficient protection to reach the lining of the rectum. So you need it, I would say, need to take it at least 12 to 24 hours before actual sexual interaction. But there is a method where you can take it just before the sex, the day of the sex, or the days of the sex, and then for a short period after the sex. And that's known as the Ibergay system, and that does offer you protection. However, I don't think it's as good.
Well, no, I'm asking if when you're starting, I mean, it's going to be fine if you've been taking it for a month. Obviously, it's going to be working. What I'm asking is, you know, I don't want people to take a pill and then go out like and think that they're fine if it takes 24 hours to start working in your system.
This is why I'm very reluctant to discuss this method with you. But the studies, if any of your listeners are curious about this, if they go to HIV iBase or they visit the website and click on that method of dosing on PrEP, they can get a full breakdown of how to take that. But
if you, I mean, to come back on that, if you're having sex with... you know, so like twice a week, for example, then it makes this event dosage meaningless, a bit of a waste of time, because then it's just easier to do it once a pill every day.
And well, that was more what I was aiming at. Yeah. If you want to get on to taking a pill once a day, how long does it initially take before you know that you're fine?
A week, we'd say a week.
A week, yeah. Oh, right, okay. So it has got a fair while for it to start actually kicking in, even with a pill a day.
I'm going to come at it at a slightly different angle. It'll answer your question. For me, one of the joys of PrEP is being able to have sex totally HIV protected without any anxiety, without having to worry about your sexual partner's HIV status. That doesn't matter because PrEP is empowering the individual to protect themselves against HIV. So for me, to start messing around with alternate dosing and event-based dosing and when do I take it, and all those variables are negating one of the key selling points of PrEP, which is HIV protection, peace of mind, and a general relaxed well-being and positive attitude towards sex and HIV-protected sex.
If you're in the prime of your life and you're going out and you're having regular intercourse with people, personally, from what you guys are saying, it sounds far better to start taking it every single day. And that was the only reason why I was asking, how long does that take before you can say, yes, I'm fine? And by the sounds of it, it sounds more like you need to leave at least a week.
Yeah. I mean, we just keep banging that message home. One of my colleagues pointed out to me that if the event-based dosing works and it's the only kind of HIV protection that someone might take, then that level of protection, whatever it is, and whatever the chances of it going wrong, some HIV protection is better than none.
Yeah.
So although it's not great for the masses, that might work very well for some people, so it's worth flagging it up. The future for PrEP looks like injectables or implants. So as long as you can take the daily pill now, as long as you can keep yourself HIV negative, the medication and the science and the advances are leaping so much that potentially in the next year or two, you'll be able to take an injection a week or an injection every month or have an implant. But the thing is, you need to stay HIV negative until those developments come along. So take the daily PrEP, stay negative, and take advantage of the advances when they arrive.
One final question. Do you think we'll see in our lifetime a day when there is no more HIV?
We can really slow new infections. We can really, really slow new infections with PrEP and with treatment as prevention. So getting positive guys onto effective treatment. If we combine
that
those
is a
two,
big key part of it, isn't it?
San Francisco it's returned a
it's
study.
Knowing your status so that you're not part of it.
And I think also, going back to what you mentioned earlier, Brett, I think the whole testing and actually knowing your status and taking the responsibility, and whether that's through your local GU clinic, whether it's coming into Terence Higgins Trust or going to one of the community-based outreach programs that happen, is about taking that responsibility to be aware of what your status is.
In short, know your status, get tested, because you can't make a decision if you don't know what you're making a decision on. Sure.
And you don't want to leave it too late. Right. And going back to your question about will we see the last of HIV in our lifetimes, I would hope yes. That's why we're always fighting, that's why we're always doing all these things. But I think PrEP in itself is not... To me, it's going to be as eventful as, for example, in the 1960s when women had the pill to stop getting pregnant. So this pill is not going to just prevent HIV, it's going to prevent a lot of mental distress and even mental ill health.
Well, if you're listening and you want to know more about it, obviously there are a range of websites here. We know about yours, iwantprepnow.co.uk,
tht.org.uk,
and I'm assuming it's NHS for yourself, is it?
The best websites out there, Terence Higgins Trust is very, very good. Otherwise, NHS Choices, or just put in your local gum clinic in your browser.
Cool. Well, listen, it's been a fascinating conversation, and I really do hope it helps to get the message out there. But to all three of you, a huge thank you for coming and joining us on the show. And hopefully we'll have you back one day.
Thank you.
Thank you.